What is poppin', Wilfrid Laurier University? Welcome to the new year, 2022. We are so excited, or maybe not, with this new COVID lockdown mumbo jumbo. But hey, it's a new year. We are new. It's a new news team, actually. We have a new member. Welcome, Fatima.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, our newest.
I'm glad to be on it.
So we now have another person, so more insights, more perspectives, more opinions. Stay tuned. So yeah, all right, first story of 2022. I'm gonna start everyone off with some Kazakhstan geopolitics, I guess. So basically, just to kind of oversimplify this developing story, there's been quite a bit of unrest in Kazakhstan, which is like an a Central Asian country, kind of near Afghanistan and like Russia. And Kazakhstan, for those who don't know, used to be part of the Soviet Union, and it's a decently large country. So obviously when the Soviet Union fell apart, Kazakhstan became its own state. And so yeah, there's been unrest because the country's leader, like the leader of the state, his name is Tokayev. He ordered a ruthless crackdown last week on his people after protesters started protesting over rising fuel prices. And they were taken over by violent groups who started attacking the government buildings. They actually briefly seized the airport in Almaty, Kazakhstan's largest city. And Tokayev was kind of accusing his own protesters of being terrorists and actually started killing them. I think 160 around there, like civilians or protesters, however you want to label them, were basically killed. And Russia actually sent in like large amounts of troops and tank, just, you know, military whatnot to sort of back Kazakhstan. And it's sort of just kind of like a whole just not looking good. 9,900 people have been detained in the aftermath of the violence by the Kazakh government, which is kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of just a developing story. It's looking like the violence is sort of kind of died down, but the country is looking extremely unstable. And yeah, okay, yeah, 164 people dead. Sorry, I just confirmed that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's crazy. It's really unfortunate, but we'll keep you updated on sort of how that story develops in the coming weeks, as I'm sure there'll be more.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have more details in the next week.
Yeah. Anyone want to take it away with some COVID stuff or whatever?
Sure, I can go into more local news regarding COVID. So as you guys probably already know, Ontario has been pretty much completely unable to test fast enough to keep up with the rates of COVID in our communities and such. So right now, what the recommendation is, like, you may be wondering, how do we track all of this stuff if we can't rely on the case numbers anymore? Because we've been hearing numbers like 11,000, 10,000, and then 9,000 as of yesterday, I believe. However, the backlog of testing and the lack of availability of tests means that these are actually like vast underestimates of things. Mm-hmm. So that means that there's a lot more prevalence of COVID than we actually can confirm with the numbers. So the way that we're apparently going to be measuring things going forward is through things like hospitalization rates and also the occurrence of COVID particles, I guess, in the wastewater, which is an interesting way of measuring it. I mean, apparently there was a news story that just came out that said that there was Omicron detected in Nova Scotia wastewater before it was detected in South Africa. So that kind of just shows that when these new variants emerge, it's not like it necessarily comes directly from one place. but it's more like it's spread out and it's just a natural manifestation of, I guess, of the disease just mutating to adapt itself to conditions. But like, I just wanted to ask you guys, the other hosts, how many people do you know who've gotten infected with COVID? Because I feel like that's a better measure of how widespread it is, because I think everyone kind of knows someone at this point who has had COVID, or they themselves have had COVID.
Yeah.
Well, if honestly, like, I had it like last week.
Oh, really?
And it was nothing. Like, it was literally not. Honestly, like, this new variant, like, I know a lot of people who have it, and I including, like, I know an immune compromised person. I know old people.
Oh, really?
I don't know a single person that's actually got, like, sick from this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I probably know, like, at least, yeah, like, 6 or 7 people, like, personally, including myself, that had it. So, open it up, Doug Ford.
Yeah.
Open it up.
I think... Mm-hmm. Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, last year around this time, I didn't know a lot of people who had it. I think that was, mm-hmm, we had the main variant at the time. And then over time, we had different ones come up. So the new variant that exists now, with that, I think I know, like, maybe a good, like, 7, 8 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, close friends who've gotten it. And each of their experiences were very different. Mm-hmm. Some of them, and it was really weird with the testing. I think you mentioned that earlier with the PCR testing and the rapid testing, like, there's like a huge backlog.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I got tested over a week ago just in case, mm-hmm, just to kind of see, because some of my close friends were potentially exposed.
Yeah,
and I still haven't received my results back.
Wow, that is crazy.
Yeah, it's been several weeks now. So it's like, in that whole time period, I am waiting, but I could have just, like, I potentially probably don't have COVID right now, but exactly. It's like, how would you know if you don't get the results in time? Like, you know,
literally the amount of time it takes to get your results, you would probably have recovered from it already.
Exactly. So it's, and then once again, like you mentioned, there's like a shortage for the testing, yeah, as well. It was very hard for me to even get that slot.
Get the test. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, like, this year might be a little bit more hectic than last year with the whole lockdown thing. And I hope that we're not in lockdown. Like, you know, like the whole past year, like Doug Ford, like, would extend it for 30, exactly, like, you know, and then again and again.
On and off and on and off.
Yeah.
I would like to know what's going on, please.
Yeah, exactly. What are your, like, quick side thing related to this? I want to ask, what do you guys think about like the schools, like obviously universities and stuff are online till like the end of Jan. What do you guys think? Like, do you think that after Jan it'll go back in person? Do you think it's likely or not? Do you think it's a good idea? Like, what do you guys think on that?
To be honest, I don't think I have enough information to predict whether we would go back mm-hmm. in after January. Honestly, I'm not too mad about it being online in January, because with the amount of snow and the type of weather we've been having, I'm mm-hmm. not trying to go out right now.
Yeah.
But honestly, I feel like it's unlikely that they'll push us back by February, because mm-hmm. the way that things are going, it's not like any of the metrics that they're now using to measure COVID mm-hmm. are going down.
Yeah.
And I think we have to wait a bit longer, because I think right now we're seeing cases of people who were exposed over the holiday period, because they mm-hmm. didn't lock down before the holidays. They, like, let everything happen, like all the parties and stuff happen over the holidays, and then we're coming back now into January, and then they're gonna lock down after everyone's right. already been exposed.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like we have to wait for things to go back to normal. You kind of just have to accept that the pandemic has become endemic now, which means that it's like flu used to be a pandemic, Spanish flu used to be a pandemic, but it didn't actually go away. Like, it's not that Spanish flu is no longer a thing, it's just that people don't get as sick from influenza anymore.
Mm-hmm,
so that's
mm-hmm.
like the bright side of how widespread Omicron is and how fast it transmits, is yeah. that it gives people that immunity, so it's not not necessarily immunity in that you won't get sick, but immunity in that it's not devastating to you if you got it.
Right.
You know, like, you're not going to pass away because you had Omicron, for example, after
outbreak.
Yeah. But I think also going back to what you guys were saying about how it's not really that serious among people who you've met who've had it, like, that's the same for me. Like, a couple of my friends have had it, but they're vaccinated, so it wasn't that bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the vaccine doesn't necessarily prevent you from getting sick at all, like, it definitely helps in terms of how bad you get sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
I would say, I don't know if someone mentioned this already. I'm kind of
Sorry, Jeffrey, your audio is, like, super low.
Is it still?
Although, a bit better.
Should I keep going or what?
It's quite silent. Is there something you can do, like, do you have earphones?
Nah, I don't. No, with a mic.
Honestly. Oh, okay.
Bro, really? Where's your computer? Like, where's the mic on a computer? Does anyone know?
That's a good question.
Hold on, I'll pause the recording. Okay, we're back. Sorry, guys. Jeffrey had to leave due to technical difficulties, but we can just pick up right where we left off. So could you remind me, Fatima, what we were discussing?
Yeah, we were pretty much talking about COVID and the new variant. And I think you were mentioning some facts about that.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was saying that although most of us, I feel, know people who, or directly know people who have got COVID or have got COVID ourselves, we kind of have not had anyone close to us, or we don't know anyone close to us who's been, like, hospitalized or seriously ill or, like, died from COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was saying that I think that's, like, speaking to how the vaccines are preventing serious illness as opposed to just preventing illness altogether as they did with Delta, which I guess is a good sign, because I mean, everyone gets sick at some point. You don't have to not get sick, but it's just not going to the hospital is the key.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen any, like, reports on that. I think there was some on, like, deaths within Ontario. I forget what the number was, but that also I don't think I've come across as much.
Yeah, because although the case numbers are increasing, the proportion of deaths is not really going up at the same level, especially not as it was when it was Delta going around and we didn't have the vaccines yet.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I was going to also add to this by saying, obviously, a lot of people are frustrated and they want, things to remain open, not so happy with how things are functioning within the system. What do you think would be, obviously, this is opinionated. What do you think would be, like, a solution? Because, like, if they start opening everything up, I think they went into lockdown a little late, to be honest, in my opinion. And I think, like, time and time again, it's always dealt within a later matter. Like, you know, like, it's not dealt at the time that it should be. And then we have to pay the consequences by dealing with these extended lockdowns, which are really annoying and never ending.
I honestly have to agree with you there. And I think the problem is that no one wants to be the person who locks down before a holiday.
Yeah.
Especially because of, like, the time that Omicron emerged. It was coming up to Christmas time and everyone was already excited because they're like, okay, we have our vaccines. We can do family gatherings now. Some people haven't seen their families for, like, 2 years and they were really excited. So I can understand why they didn't lock down by Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel as though there should have been some kind of additional measure, maybe not a lockdown necessarily, but some kind of preventative thing to stop the spread or slow it down a bit.
Yeah, for sure. It was crazy.
Yeah, because I mean, everyone was but to be fair, I think Omicron was probably circulating from even before we we're like aware of it 100% in Canada.
For sure, for sure. I mean, it kind of makes sense when you look at it too. Once again, like it's very similar to a regular flu or a cold. Like a typical cold or flu takes max, like what, maybe a week for recovery, maybe 5 days or something. And apparently the new variant, the recovery period is really short. So 5 days, I think, yeah. They tell you to stay in isolation and you're all good. So I think you're right on that.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
I think in addition, like, although the data has proved that it is a shorter incubation period or a shorter period that you're contagious for, mm-hmm. I think also that it they can't tell you to isolate for 2 weeks anymore because the amount of people who have Omicron right now, mm-hmm. if everyone had to isolate for 2 weeks, we would have like a complete crash.
Yeah,
there would be nobody.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's kind of what was the burnout for the original variant, right? For COVID, like last year, everyone had to isolate. I know some people who, just to be on the safe side, almost isolated for like an entire month. Yeah. Because there, you know, there's multiple family members and they were kind of like paranoid. Exactly. And so it's crazy, but no, for sure. And now there's news about other variants that have been found. So I don't know, like,
reading the news about new other variants is just, it's just so exhausting. I try to stay away from reading the news unless because if you just keep on reading it and like seeing all of that stuff, it just makes you so anxious and depressed, man. Like
100%.
I feel like everyone thought we were almost out. And then this happened.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because I think, when was it? I think it was for this March, or was it May? Maybe I'm mixing that up. We were like, masks were not supposed to be a thing anymore. Yeah. Like there's a whole plan set out, you know?
Exactly. And everyone was so hyped for that. And like back to in-person class.
Yeah, like not to be pessimistic, but when I heard that at the time, I really, like a part of me was like, no, I don't think, is this too soon?
Same.
Based off of what we went through, but obviously people still have hope, right? You want it to be done by then.
And I mean, I think maybe saying that, saying all in person was maybe a bit too soon, mm-hmm. but maybe it would have been more, I don't know what the word is to describe, more like cautious or conservative, mm-hmm. to say that it would be like hybrid again, you know, like some online, some in person. Because the other thing is, like, international students, some of them have been stuck at home,
mm-hmm.
and not every country has the same access to vaccines, and like not every country has the same vaccines that are accepted by Canada, right? So like it would have been difficult for people if it was still online, I mean still in person. Mm-hmm, and if we made everything in person, I see that could have caused a lot of problem for international students, because they would have had to prepare to like travel during that. It's still technically a pandemic, right? Like they still would have had to travel or like arrange their vaccines, or then prepare to isolate for 2 weeks if they weren't vaccinated yet.
For sure. And it just
seemed like it was kind of a rush. I think they still should have made it an option to be online.
For sure. I 100% agree with this. I think, like, once again, I don't think COVID is something that'll just disappear within like a next year or whatever. I think it will kind of forever just kind of be there. And so it's too quick for things to just go full back in person, like you said. And I think for schools and things, like, I know like a lot of workplaces, right? Like a lot of companies are forever now, like for the remaining.
Yeah, like remote work.
Yeah, remote work. And I think they're kind of flexible with that. And so I think that's good. And I think for schools, like, it's also kind of scary, right? For like younger children or like us being in universities and stuff. Either way, I think that it would have been nice if we also had that option.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Although I think for younger kids, the in-person school is most important for them, because one, their parents have to work and they have to go, like they can't just leave the kids alone. And even if you're working from home, if you have to take care of your kids while you're working, that's like very distracting, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
And also the kids themselves, like at that young age, you need to be socializing, like you need to be seeing other kids, playing with them and developing social skills.
For
sure. So I know that that like in person for younger kids is definitely a priority. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side of it, it's like some people live with their grandparents, or like some of their parents are older. And if you have the kids going to school, although the kids themselves are not necessarily a high-risk group,
mm-hmm.
they can still pass it on to somebody who is in a high-risk group, which is like, sure. I can see why they're being more cautious about that. But also I feel like going back in person was probably what they saw as the best decision for that age group of kids.
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely 100% agree with that. But like you said, there's also, I mean, even though like the risks or the chances of them, you know, being exposed to it is less, mm-hmm. Like you said, like they can still carry it and give it off to others who are more susceptible to it. And I'm sure, you know, like there are some children who also do end up getting it. And then it's like, you know, the it's also not great. So there's so many factors, right? So I really don't know. Like when people ask, I'm like,
it's just a very complicated situation.
It is. And like the one point that you made earlier, you were saying like looking at the news, like it makes you more depressed and stuff like that. I think mm-hmm. like we're taught, like when it comes to COVID, we're mainly focused on the internal, like, you know, like our health, physically, like in that sense.
Yeah.
But not like, I think in the midst of that, we forget to kind of think about like our mental health too, right?
100%.
Yeah. I think that's like a really, really big thing. I struggled with that a lot.
Yeah.
Throughout same. COVID. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was just not a good time.
It honestly feels like it's just like uncertainty makes people super anxious, of course.
For sure.
Like no one really knows what's going on, and then it's like as soon as you feel like you can relax a bit and go a bit back to normal, or you just make like small adjustments to your schedule instead of huge life-changing adjustments,
yeah,
back to the same place where you were before. And I feel like that probably has something to do with you had mentioned that there was like a couple hundred of overdose deaths in Kitchener-Waterloo.
Yes.
I think we're going to be seeing more of that, unfortunately, because people are not, that people's mental health is not being catered to at this point.
I 100% agree. And I think aside from that, it's not, at least for like a small city like Kitchener-Waterloo, I don't think it's really, this is kind of my first time coming across a reporting kind of mm-hmm. like that. I it caught my eye and I kind of read up on it, and like you said, I mean, for listeners, like just to kind of give more info on that, and then we can add our thoughts and stuff, but like you mentioned, there was a CTV News article stating mm-hmm. that there were 99 suspected overdose deaths in Kitchener-Waterloo, or Waterloo specifically. And there was a record of 106 overdose deaths in the area. So I was kind of shocked by that. I mean, not shocked in the sense that, oh, I wouldn't think that this would happen, but in the sense that, oh, it's being brought to attention now, I guess, in a sense. Like the Waterloo Region overdose monitoring report shows that 1,504 overdose related calls in 2021. We're also including 138 in the month of December. So it is just interesting to kind of see that that's been brought up now, due to the attention of, you know, I think it has to do with, I mean, you know, it would make sense, right, with COVID and everything like that. And like you said, it could definitely increase, if anything. So,
I mean, I don't think people have enough support systems in place to like, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily have the right support systems in place to get through something like this
mm-hmm.
without having to turn to like more self-destructive ways like drugs or alcohol or that kind of thing, because like I guess for us who are college students, right, so we probably have roommates and we're like close to our friends
mm-hmm.
which if you look at it is kind of a privilege, because a lot of people, they're probably, if they live alone, they don't have anyone to connect with in a lockdown.
Exactly. And
it's like, are you gonna risk Kat getting physically sick, or are you going to take care of your mental health? And that's like, on one hand, yes, you shouldn't want to be spreading the virus, but on the other hand, I think it's unreasonable to expect people to just like completely stay away from socializing or social interactions, because people need it. Like, we're a social species, we need to see other people.
For sure, 100%.
Doing it over Zoom is not it. Like, it's just not enough. It's not the same.
No, for sure. You're 100% right on that. I agree. Yeah, I just think that, I mean, it's definitely hard on everyone, mm-hmm. in the sense of, you know, kind of being isolated quite literally. Yeah. But then I sometimes think about like going back to like children and stuff, you know, like I've seen videos like on social media or like TikTok, mm-hmm. Of parents who would like take their child out, like say like a year old or almost a year old, and they would record a video saying, oh, my child's first time at the grocery store or something, and the child looks so
scared,
scared or like in awe, because they, you know, they're like, what is this, right? So
yeah,
I think of those videos sometimes, and it puts it in perspective, like thinking back at like our childhood, we for the most part, like, you know, we were able to do all these things. We'd never imagined that
exactly,
you know, something like this would happen. like a global pandemic, mm-hmm. and then affecting like a country like Canada too. I never imagined that. And then when you think about it, I'm like, you know, kind of like, it's not shocking, because mm-hmm. I mean, this was bound to happen at one point in our lifetime, I guess. Yeah. Right. So I think about that sometimes too. And I'm like, well, but then I think about the kids and I'm like, oh, that's so unfortunate. Right. Like mm-hmm. they don't get to experience their childhood. Like, yeah, exactly. So I feel for them too. And, that's another concerning thing, right?
And also the mental health of the doctors and stuff. Like, there's a huge staffing problem right now for the hospitals.
Yes.
Which is kind of why it's so serious that we've had to lock down, because the doctors and nurses have been dealing with this for almost 2 years now.
100%. And,
like, they don't have a break from it, and they don't get to ignore it. Like, the rest of us, we can just say, oh, well, I mean, I don't know anyone who's died, so I can just afford to, like, not think about it until it gets brought up in the news or something, right?
Right.
If you're a doctor, like, you're seeing this every single day. And I feel like a lot of people are leaving medicine as a profession because mm-hmm. they can't deal with it anymore. And honestly, I don't blame them.
No, for sure. It makes sense, but I haven't really put a lot of thought into that up until you brought that up. And it's true when you think about it, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of, like, it would make sense that a lot of doctors and stuff like that have like a burnout from it. And I remember when like COVID first hit for us, mm-hmm. and we were like, you know, frantic, and we're like, what is this, like, what's happening? Once again, we had kind of like the privilege to kind of like stay in our homes, like we had things in mm-hmm. our hands, but when you're in the medical field, like, they were the ones who are at like forefront, right? And like, once again, like, it's scary because they also have family members and things like that. And mm-hmm. so I also think about them too. And it makes sense that a lot of people may not pursue the medical field as a career as well, right? There's just so many layers to COVID. That's the thing, like, that really gets me sometimes. It's not just like, oh, it's COVID, mm-hmm. you know, problem, solution, somewhat solution, here's like possibilities. It's like, there's so many layers to it, right? And so that's why when someone asks me or I have a conversation with them about COVID, in my opinion, like, because of those layers, I say, I don't think it's something that can just finish. Like, you know, like there's no timestamp on it. Mm-hmm. I just think it's forever somehow a part of our lives now, unfortunately, kind of in a way. So,
I mean, at some point it will become less of a big deal in that it won't be killing so many people, but it's just the period of time we have to go through to get to that point is exhausting.
100% for sure.
And
just thinking about that, like, you know, I don't know, it's just it's not
it really isn't.
and
then the other thing is, it's not like being a doctor or a nurse or whatever is something that you can do in just 4 years, like a 4-year degree.
Yeah, they're
they're in school for like 10 years sometimes, and it's not like you can just easily replace them.
100%.
So it's just a very complicated situation altogether. And then on top of that, like, did you hear that they were paying the that they offered to pay doctors more to do nursing work? Because to a great extent, a lot of the people who are like getting the burnout the worst are the nurses themselves. So instead of offering to pay the nurses more to compensate them for their time, mm-hmm. they were going to pay doctors to do nursing work at a higher rate than the nurses would have got.
No, I did not know about this. I know like nurses did have like a burnout, obviously, right? And but I did not know about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's like it's really messed up, because if you're gonna go to the extent of paying doctors more, why can't you just give that money to the nurses?
For sure. Yeah. No, it's that's not really it. But that's crazy.
Yeah.
I guess like when as humans, like we're that's the thing, right? I think we're just like even like, you know, Doug Ford or the government. I just think like in this whole thing, like there's a lot of not so great decisions being made mm-hmm. or ideas being brought up front. So that one that you mentioned about the nurses and the doctors, like, you know, objectively, I would say is not, it doesn't make sense, right? Like you kind of hear that and you kind of laugh at that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of these decisions are being taken because of like, a desire to win an election as opposed to actually help the people.
For sure. I think, for sure. I think, of course, like the economy like has severely been like affected by everything as well. There's just, once again, there's like a whole layer to the system, right? And so I think aside from last year, even now, I think like the government's main focus now, because there's so many businesses too, right? And jobs and how we're like, supposed to,
This is really affecting the service sector people really badly, like especially restaurants and so on.
For sure.
Like, a couple of my friends work in restaurants, and my friend, she used to get like full hour, like 16 hours or so shifts. Mm-hmm. And now she has like 5 hours per week because the restaurant can't afford to stay open for the amount of hours that they used to.
See, like, yeah, that's just right. And then people like rely on those kind of jobs to right, like have their income, especially, and then like,
tip jobs, because if you're a lot of your income comes from tips and there's no more dining, like I feel like the tips will decrease, you know.
For sure, right? 100%, because then I guess people just like order food like online, like through delivery apps. Yeah, once again, like, I mean, like, we had, like, the government had, like, CERB last year, and, I mean, even that whole process of coming into play was, like, it took some time, and, yeah, it was just, like, really difficult. Like, I would hear stories about how, like, families or whoever was a breadwinner of the family, like, they would have, like a hard time kind of, like, you know, even bringing, like, food to the table and things like that.
Because, like, most of your income just gets, like, for us college students, like, CERB was blessed. Like, $2,000 per month is more than we'd normally earn, I feel.
Yeah.
But if you're a working person and you have a family, that's really not enough.
For sure. So, I mean, like, that was there for some time. And then some folks had, like, EI through work. But I just feel like that whole process of coming into play took some time as well. And then, I mean, then it obviously stopped because we thought, you know, everything was fine and dandy. And then now, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about the government.
I think there is some kind of benefit, but I'm not 100% clear on how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I just feel like there's so many conditions and things, like for so many of these things. But it's like, what if I don't meet the conditions and I, you know, I have a family like to feed. Right. And, you know, it's just like really, I don't know. I just think that it's not being dealt with the way it should be.
Yeah, I agree.
It wasn't and it still isn't. So it's just really draining, right?
Definitely. It's so draining. And I feel really bad for people who have gotten, I guess, less hours or laid off or something because of the new thing, especially in the service sector. And like people who opened restaurants right before Omicron, oh my gosh, I feel it for them. Because they were probably
hopeful.
Really banking on you know?
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I mean, that goes for, like, bigger cities and even, like, smaller ones. Like, CW, but like Toronto is also going through it as well. It's because it's a bigger city, and you know, they more stores. So it's just yeah, from all ends, like it's not a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't know what's gonna happen in regards to that, but and with like the job thing that you mentioned, like it's crazy because like when things seem like they're going back to place, the jobs, yeah, it goes back, like trying to find a job can be quite difficult, right?
Exactly.
But the minute we go back into another phase of like, oh, lockdown or whatever, like it's mm-hmm. crazy because then you hear that companies are recruiting, like they're hiring, right? And so it's just interesting to kind of see that pattern too, right? In the yeah. job field. So it's, yeah, I really don't know.
Yeah. It's a crazy time right now.
Yeah.
Did you have any other stories you wanted to talk about?
Honestly, when I checked the news, once again, like you said that you try not to read like the articles or whatever about the new variants and things like that. That's yeah. pretty much my relationship with news, like in general. I used to be really passionate about just kind of like I would play, like if my dad was like driving or whatever, he'd have like CBC news, like so it was just like I would yeah. listen to all these things, right? Quite passionately. Mm-hmm. I had some courses that I had taken, like global studies or like global issues, like throughout yeah. high school and uni as well, so that would kind of keep me engaged in reading about what's happening in the world and locally and things like that. But ever since COVID hit, I've just kind of also refrained from looking into that because I can't help but see like at least like 8 different titles or articles about COVID.
Yeah.
And then you're really trying to find something else, right? That's not COVID related. So mm-hmm. one of the ones that really stood out to me for today, I guess, that was reported was the overdose
yeah.
cases. That one was like the major one that I had for today. Mm-hmm. And I think that was about it. Yeah. I mean, aside from that, like if we're talking more locally, like, you know, there was a in police investigating an armed robbery. I think that took place in Kitchener.
Wow, where was it?
I didn't read fully up on it, but the article says that an investigation is ongoing after an armed robbery at Kitchener business on Saturday. So I guess they're not specifying what business it was. Yeah, so I think it was like around 1:35 p.m. It was around Highland Road.
Okay.
Yeah. By Belmont, and two men entered a business with weapons and demanded merchandise and cash from store employees before fleeing the area in a vehicle on Highland Road. So no physical injuries were reported, but that was it. So they're continuing to investigate on that. So I think it's like things like that, but even these stories, I think they get overshadowed by, once again, COVID or what the government is saying, right? So
yeah.
100%. Yeah.
And even these types of crimes, I feel like with the economic situation right now, mm-hmm. plus the extreme high cost of living, and that is just increasing even in Kitchener and Waterloo.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. A lot more
like these type of crimes because people are getting desperate right now.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, the house market, like that's a really good point that you brought up. It's so crazy to me because obviously like 15, 20 years ago, like, yeah, like buying a house in KW was so, so cheap. Then obviously over time, it just like goes up, right? Like I think back then you could really like even buy like a place for like 80,000 or something.
Wow.
Yeah. And so at most maybe like 100,000 or something, a little more than that. But now it's just like, there was an article that a title that I came across, I think it was yesterday, but I can't remember where it was. Where it said that a house in Kitchener-Waterloo was sold for a little over $1 million.
Yeah, I saw that too. Oh, I think it was on CBC.
Okay, yeah. I didn't get to see like I didn't get to click on it and like read on, look at like how the house looked like the location, because those things matter too, right?
Yeah.
But to honestly, even when you look at the photo of it too, like it just, you're just shocked because
yeah,
that doesn't matter anymore. Like how it looks, where the location is, it's still going to be that much, right?
Because the I actually read that article yesterday and they were saying that nowadays the average price of a semi-detached or a detached house in Kitchener-Waterloo is like 800K.
That's crazy. That's, yeah, it's insane. And then
for the condo style apartment or whatever, it's like 500.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, and yeah.
It's just going up and up and up. And then yeah, we're becoming like Toronto. If you thought Toronto was bad, like we're getting there.
For sure, for sure. I remember like even a little bit before COVID hit, I think, looking at like some places, like if you're looking for like a separate place for yourself with no roommates or anything like that, just like a very small room with like, you know, a kitchen, washroom and all that. It was very similar to the Toronto pricing for some of the locations, right? And like you're just like shocked because I mean, you know, it's Kitchener-Waterloo, like it's a small area, like you know what I mean? So
it could be that much.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I think that doesn't matter anymore. And I used to live in the countryside like for most of my life.
Oh, okay.
So a little out of like maybe like a 35, sometimes 40 minute drive out of KW. And I moved, I mean, I still would come visit, like obviously, because where I lived, there was absolutely nothing there. Like we didn't have a gas station, didn't have a grocery store, like nothing. So it was like 2000 people, I think, population wise. So we'd always have to drive out to even go grab milk or something.
Yeah.
But the pricing there was pretty good. Like at the time, like when we moved there and even throughout the years of growing up there. Right. But look, I like was talking to my family about it too. Like now, like the population has increased so much. There's newer houses are being made. There's like new families are moving out there. And and when you look at the pricing, it definitely has increased a lot more than when we used to live there.
It really but has.
It's a little bit cheaper, just a little bit cheaper, enough for like younger families to still, they're still willing to come do that 30, 40 minute drive down to like the major city, right? But even there, like the prices have like gone up. So you're just sitting here, like, you know, like, where do you go move? Where?
Yeah, for real.
You know?
Like, what do you do if you're just like graduating school and you maybe don't have that much money yet? Like,
for sure.
It's one thing to say, oh, you should be saving up for this, or like, you should be making sure that you get a good job to afford a place. But at the same time, like, housing is a human right. You can't you can't just say, oh, well, if you're poor, then suffer. That's not right. Like, everyone deserves a place to live.
For sure, for sure. It's just making it really difficult. And then obviously this system or capitalism in itself, like in a nutshell, is in the sense where you can't really afford anything if you don't have access to higher education. And then having access to higher education is also not easy. Yeah, it's not guaranteed. And then it's also not easy to even like obtain in the first place, right?
Yeah.
We're left with like these huge loans at the age of like 22, right? And then you have this pressure to go find a job. And then once again, there's no guarantee. Like, you know, it's just like not like a fun time.
Yeah, we're entering such an uncertain world right now, especially with COVID as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like COVID was just like the cherry on top, I guess, you know. But yeah, like the jobs, and like when you're from smaller cities, right?
Yeah, you don't have very hard city people do.
Yeah, so then like then you gotta like you have more on your plate, right? In terms of expenses, like, you know, most people like, typically speaking, they'll find jobs in like bigger cities, so like Toronto and stuff, right? Then you have to have the money to pay for the rent.
Exactly. And so, like, and even if you're saving money on rent, you still have to commute, and gas is expensive, and like
for sure,
or public transport, even
like either way, right? You're kind of like tied from every end. And like I was talking to a friend because she lives in Toronto, and the pricing, even because I mean, even prices for groceries and things like that have gone up, like even in KW and everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah. I'll go sometimes, like I'll even if I'm like picking up snacks or something, I'll pick up like three things and four things at most. But and it comes down, it comes down to like $60, $58 or something. Yeah. It's not as intense, I would say, in KW, because we still have sales and stuff at grocery stores and things like that. But I was talking to my friend in Toronto and she was saying that it's insane. Like just one deodorant, she was saying, was like $10 or $12. Wow. And like things, yeah, things like that. So I was like, oh.
I was looking for, because I'm graduating this year, so I'm looking for places. And I saw a place in Toronto and the rent was like $2,900. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even have laundry in the building. And it was a one bedroom.
Oh God. Yeah, that's.
And it's right. Just, like, who can afford that? Even if you're making, even if you're not like making minimum wage, if you're making $30 an hour, you still technically can't afford that. Like that's more of your paycheck than you could realistically afford on rent, to spend on rent.
I think like, I think even if you make a little over like 50K or 60K within a year, I think it's still difficult in cities like that because obviously you don't want to just like, I mean, that's how capitalism is, but you don't want to just be like a slave to the system like that. But it's just built in that sense where you mm-hmm. work and that money just goes straight into these bills or the high rent, right? And the expensive groceries. And then you...
At that rate, you can't even afford to like save up money to buy your own house.
Exactly. Because
you're spending like 80% of your paycheck on rent.
For
and
sure.
then that doesn't even account for things like groceries or like other needs that you may have or maybe if you have kids or pets or something and then by the time you're paying your basic needs then you can't even afford to save up for a rainy day. So like what happens when you lose your job, you know? There's like no security whatsoever.
There isn't. And like if the, like you said, like it goes straight into the major expenses that you need. And then if you want to like you can't travel, you can't have like, you can't save, you can't do any of that. So I think it's just like it's a vicious cycle of our generation, at least not being able to buy a house. Like our parents mm-hmm. were probably able to, but more so just go rent to rent type of thing. Right. And then obviously if you do have a house, it's probably through generational.
Like, you know, it's not common anymore for someone to just be like a working person. You graduate from uni, you get a job, and then in a few years you can buy a house. It's not like that anymore unless you have
exactly
and I mean not like as we speak right now mm-hmm. I'm looking at an ad for a house in Toronto on York Street mm-hmm. that's $1,700 for a studio, and it's not even like a studio where your bed is in the living room. The bed folds up.
No.
They're advertising it as a feature for the bed to fold up. Like you can't even have a permanent bed in your place.
The thing is like if you saw like something like that, I guess like in Waterloo or something, mm-hmm. I think it like you would really like it would kind of be difficult to kind of find someone for that. But like I think in places like Toronto, people who put it up for rent don't even have to try, right? Because at the end of the day, they will find someone.
Like I'm sure if I were to DM them, they're probably like, oh actually sorry, someone already like DM'd us and secured it. You know?
No, it's scary and it's difficult. But just to add on to everything I was gonna say, like another thing is like health. Like mm-hmm. some people are not insured, right? You get your insurance through work, but if you're laid off or you're not getting a lot of hours or something, then that's also kind of taken away from you in a sense. And I think being a student, and if you have like medical expenses too and stuff like that's also difficult. But like Ford has
OHIP stops covering certain stuff after you're 25.
I mean that was like that even that was implemented not too long ago. Mm-hmm. Like for me, like if I need to get anything, thankfully it's like covered under OHIP because it's a covered prescription. But aside from that, it's like, what do you do after 25? Like, you know, once again, I might not have a job right away. Like, or, you know,
it's crazy out here.
Yeah.
We're pretty much at time, so we can wrap up now, but Thanks everyone for listening, and this was a great first show, Fatima. We're looking forward to having you on for the rest of the term.
Thank you so much. It was nice being able to be on today.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and have a great week. Bye.